Light out, everybody.
Hey everybody, this is Steven. Welcome back into a special addition to the Radcast. You can call it kind of a tag to the episode we released on Friday, or whenever you're listening to this, the episode we released before this. You can call it a tag, an addendum. I think in what you're about to listen to, I refer to it as some sort of an addendum of sorts. You could look at it as a bonus to kind of what we did with our dear friend Tyler Crandall when we talked about A Nightmare on Elm Street. Now, if you saw this and you saw before it was our episode about A Nightmare on Elm Street, go listen to that episode. You don't have to listen to that to understand what we're talking about here, but it definitely helps. And I think that episode, I may be biased, turned out fantastic. We had a great time talking about a horror classic, a horror standard, and kind of a game changer in the world of horror movies with A Nightmare on Elm Street. With what you're about to listen to here, it's a little different. We kind of take a more serious note, but we talk about things that are important to us, important to Tyler, and important to a lot of people who we know listen. And that is the subject of fear and of emotions. Those are two of the biggest things that are talked about in this kind of spur of the moment discussion. I don't know if I'll cut it or not. I haven't started editing it at the time that I'm recording this, but there's a moment again that I may have edited out. There's a moment in the episode where I talk about how, or in this bonus bit, to where I talk about we were done recording. We were just kind of chatting with Tyler, or Matt and Tyler were chatting with one another, and I went off into another room. I think I went to go to the bathroom, and I could hear them. They're having a discussion about, you know, just life and a discussion about things. Whenever with Tyler, we have great talks about stuff. And I sit down and I'm sitting there for just a couple minutes, and Matt and Tyler are digging into some really good stuff, some really good life things and point of views on some important things, with like human nature and how things tie back to Nightmare on Elm Street. And they don't get probably 5 minutes into their discussion, and I'm like, would it be okay with you guys if I turn the microphones back on? I just wanted to check, and they're both like, yeah man, like, go ahead. And what you're about to listen to is the result of that. Just a shoot from the hip from all three sides here. So again, spur of the moment, whatever was on our hearts and our minds, we just put back to recording. And hopefully those of you listening to it, one of the main reasons was it was a great discussion. We had moments where we tied it back to the movie, thus kind of the addendum portion of it, the tag to it. We still kind of tied it to the movie in ways, but we feel like it's something that if you listen to it, now none of us are experts on a lot of things, but we do have, you know, stuff that we care about when it comes to emotion, when it comes to anxiety, when it comes to human nature and kind of what connects everybody. And we kind of touch on all that stuff in here, along with fear as well. We hope that it is helpful. We hope that it's something that I think I said in the bonus here that it's, you know, stuff that's life-giving in a way, things that help other people with as little knowledge as we have on stuff like this. Speak it from the heart. We hope it helps people. So I'm going to stop talking your ear off. I'm just going to go right into, it's kind of still in line with what we do with Radcast Halloween, but it just was something that the three of us at the end of this little bonus session, coming from our hearts, we were like, we feel really good about that. And I was like, I cannot wait to edit that. Cannot wait for people to hear it. And I am super proud of it. So for those of you listening, I hope you like it. I hope it helps you in some way. And if you just enjoyed our conversation, that's all that matters. We just want to bring joy. So thank you all for listening. And here is our discussion about, among other things, fear and emotion. So nightmares, you said Nightmare on Elm Street. You know, that's kind of what you got out of it, stoned. Yeah. So yeah, no, it's
altered state.
Yeah, exactly. And then you're like, how much of this is me just in an altered state? How much of like this is very, this is, seems like a very heady, kind of cerebral, really smart, intelligent idea. And you're like, oh, wait, what? But I think there is a lot to, and we're finding out more with like marijuana and stuff. It does things to your brain that helps build, at least mushrooms as well. Like,
for sure.
Builds these bridges in your brain, creates new pathways and stuff. So there's something to what's normally kind of lampooned as, whoa, dude, like, what if the sun ate us or something, you know, something like that. But which is made fun of. But I mean, there's something to that in expanding your thought processes and stuff. Yeah. And that has helped with fear, because you were saying, like, I relate to, we kind of started, do you want me to allude to the fact that we were starting?
Because I liked what you said, how that was something you picked up on, you know, with being, I think you might have picked up on this out of an altered state while watching the movie last night, because it's something that can tend to be paramount for a lot of people, and that's what you got out of the movie about fear.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a lot of misconceptions, as you guys were talking about about drugs, about marijuana, about mushrooms, about psychedelics.
Yeah.
People think it's just goofy.
Yeah.
Which it is. It's.
I mean, I'm not saying that, like,
it can be.
Yeah.
But it often, can often be, that's just one side of the prism that is shown.
Yeah.
And if you haven't had that experience, there's not really a way to synthesize it in words. Like, it's one of those things you have to experience.
Yeah.
And so what I think it does is it does allow you to see things from an objective vantage point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so for me, watching that movie last night and watching it in the past, I'm connecting the dots and being like, okay, well, I put myself kind of, I see Nancy as the avatar for me, right? And, that's kind of what storytelling is. Whoever the protagonist is, you kind of substitute yourself in there, and you start to kind of see the world.
If it's good storytelling, yeah.
Yeah, and you do it without even realizing it.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And so for me, it was like, okay, so this movie is about facing your fear. Mm-hmm. And what do most people try and do with their fear? They try and repress it. They try to escape from it. You see how Nancy's mom deals with fear.
Yeah.
Escapism and drugs, ironically.
Yeah.
But I think that intention and how you use drugs plays a big role in how your experience goes.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Set and setting, right? And so you can approach it as, I'm going to do this thing to alter my consciousness because I don't want to deal with something.
Sure.
Or you can take a drug and say, okay, I need to face this.
Yeah.
And my mindset going in is like, even like a prayer. Like, sometimes I'll pray before I smoke, or I'll pray before I take mushrooms, and I'll say, God, like, show me what you, like, tell me what you want to tell me.
Yeah.
And just kind of open myself up to that.
Yeah.
Which can be a scary thing.
Yeah. Absolutely. And especially if you don't know what to expect.
I think with as demonized as a lot of mind altering drugs has become, I think there definitely is a danger to them, but there's a danger to anything done.
Sure.
Excessively.
Sure.
But if you're taking the right dosage, human beings create these humps.
Mm-hmm.
Human beings have created, you know, ways that we deal with fear. You know, I mean, the human brain is so complex that I think just, I feel like a lot of things are kind of human concepts based upon how, when we're aware, like built out of awareness.
Yeah.
We're aware of the fact that we are, you know, three-dimensional and complex. We're aware of the fact of death. We're aware of all these things. So we're aware of failure. You know, it's human awareness that, you know, creates a lot of fear. Mm-hmm. So when you kind of take something that alters your mindset, that kind of lets that defense down.
That's absolutely what it is.
I feel like, like you mentioned, Tyler, I don't think some people could hear, "Oh, I pray before." That's not silly, because like, I think sometimes, you know, whether you believe in a God or not, or, or in a creator or whatever, there is merit to that. I feel, to where you are pulling down in a defense you've put up, to where I think it's very possible to where a being, you know, if, you know, if you're praying to God, to where they could reach you, because you are putting down this thing that you as a human have implemented on yourself, but now you're becoming more of how you should naturally be. Mm-hmm. And that is free of these things that are inhibiting your progress.
Absolutely. And I know our mom listens, and there's a lot of people this would come as a surprise to, but I've done psychedelic mushrooms.
Right.
The first and only time so far that I've had a trip, it was one of those things to where there's this peace that comes over you. You're almost moving, because like animals out there, they're not thinking about, what am I going to do next? But they're just kind of moving with the flow of nature.
Yeah, they're not forecasting the future.
Yeah,
thinking,
exactly.
I have to go do this, or I have to go do that, or I have to be this, like ego.
They're not making decisions based on past trauma, or they're not making decisions based on X, Y, and Z, whatever. They're just going with how they should move. I say the flow of nature, this flow. And when it finally, you kind of sit there and you're like, oh, like, I'm inhibiting myself. This is kind of why I'm doing this, to kind of silence that inner voice, inner critic, the anxiety, the depression, the stress, whatever is keeping me from facing my fears.
Yeah.
This is allowing me to connect with whatever outside force, whatever label you want to put on it. This is allowing me to put things in perspective and realize that there's like bigger things out there, and it would benefit me to take this kind of step back and just let it flow and let it happen kind of thing.
Yeah.
And you know, there's something to that. Like once you come down, I guess, from the trip, it does something to your brain. Like I said, psychedelics are like, there's science is starting to show that it's building bridges in like new neural pathways and stuff like that. So yeah, my solution for facing your fears isn't always take psychedelics. I'm just saying like there's a benefit.
Sure.
To something that has been demonized for a long time. But that's something that, I don't know, you use that to help draw the courage that's in you. You just have so many voices in your head suppressing all these things. It's just having, like, finding the courage is really hard for a lot of people. And I think this movie does a great job to show us the progression of Nancy. Obviously, you don't want to, out of desperation, it's like, I have to do it because there's a killer on the loose.
Mm-hmm.
But it.
But how many of us, you know, have a Freddy Krueger in our mind?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, as a stand-in for general fear or trauma or whatever from your past. And so it's like you have to face that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The whole moral of the movie to me, and this is like obviously getting really deep for
of course
80s
that's okay.
Horror movie.
I think Wes Craven meant it like that.
And it's so nuts because on this podcast, if you listen to so many of our episodes, there's just complete nonsense.
but out of just two buffoons.
Yeah, exactly.
But I love talking this. So what you get out of the movie.
I mean, so think about this also, like certainly drugs alter your consciousness, but like movies and music,
they do alter
your consciousness.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, I mean, a movie. I think Kubrick said that movies are like dreams.
Yeah,
right? That's how he kind of saw making a movie.
Yeah.
A movie is like a dream, and this movie certainly is like a dream.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of takes you on a ride.
Yeah, exactly.
But I'm sorry, what was the question?
Oh, no, it's a guy. You had mentioned how, you know, you got a deeper meaning out of this with, yeah, you know, we all have our own Freddy Kruegers.
Yeah.
And we all have, like, our own things we're trying to overcome. Yeah. And
especially, like, personally in our,
yeah,
my life, Tyler's life, yeah, your life.
And kind of, I think, in a way, real things like depression and anxiety can hit us at our most vulnerable,
yeah,
much like a Freddy Krueger at these teenagers' most vulnerable in, yeah, their dreams and in their sleep, where they don't have the protection of their family and their friends. Yeah. You're by yourself.
Yeah.
If you're depressed and you're dealing with your depression by yourself, you know, it's that, not to trivialize depression, but just, yeah, going with the kind of the metaphor here, that Freddy Krueger is taking advantage of that, mm-hmm, at where you're most,
yeah,
vulnerable.
Yeah. And maybe people's fear, there are a lot of, like, Rod in this movie. Mm-hmm. You can tell that he put up this front.
Mm-hmm.
Him and people like him, their fear might be being vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, like, they don't know how to handle that vulnerability. Mm-hmm. Sort of,
sure,
thing.
I think it's a fear for a lot of people.
Sure.
If only people knew who I really am.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know, or, yeah, or some kind of,
yeah,
variation of that,
yeah,
type of thought, right?
Yeah. I've built up this image, and, like, I feel like I'm either betraying them or myself or X, Y, and Z and all that stuff kind, yeah, of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, everyone, it seems like, is running from something.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually you have to face it head on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You have to look it in the face. You have to say, look here, you ugly motherfucker.
Yeah. So I take back all the energy I ever gave you.
All the energy, yeah, I ever gave you, mm-hmm, I take, yeah, back.
That's, yeah, and, you know, and
taking
sometimes.
Taking the power back.
Yeah, exactly.
Take the power back.
Yeah. Yeah.
There you go. A little rage
drop in there.
Yeah. Yeah.
But sometimes that's part of your process, is getting mad. Is,
yeah,
getting angry.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that. That's,
of course, not. That's, you know, the other thing, is being told that, like, calm down, don't get mad. Sometimes you need to get mad.
Yeah,
like,
sometimes that's the appropriate reaction.
Yeah, that's a human emotion. And as we know, suppressing natural human emotions doesn't end well for a lot of people,
no,
unfortunately. And so if you're – it's important to have self-control, but at the same time, if something warrants you just getting pissed off –
mm-hmm,
that's important. Mm-hmm. And sometimes for your fears,
yeah,
that's what you have to do. It's like, fuck this.
Yeah.
I'm so pissed. I'm so mad at being so scared. Fuck you. I'm going to fucking do this kind of,
yeah,
thing.
And allowing yourself to feel that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the important, is let yourself feel that,
yeah,
way. Take your guard down. All these roadblocks you put in your head, mm-hmm, that kind of you put in place,
mm-hmm,
to stay comfortable and not even harp on things that are uncomfortable. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm kind of going off the cuff here too, but there,
same,
is something,
yeah,
there's something here, like, sometimes if you try and fight fear, it gets worse.
Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm, of course.
Right. If you, yep, try to, I don't know.
You can relate it to a mushroom trip.
Well,
if you try and fight it, it gets worse.
True.
You start freaking out.
Well, I feel like part of the reason it gets worse is because if you don't know why you're afraid, if you don't know why you're afraid, you don't know how to look at those factors as to what's causing your fear, and you don't know how to try and,
yeah,
you know, get help to fix them or figure out ways or healthy behaviors to help you, if not conquer that fear, live with the fact that it's present, but I know how to, like,
yeah,
I know how to breathe, how to meditate. I know behaviors and exercises that will help me in dealing with this fear. Because sometimes people's, yeah, fears, you know, you can take a pill for anxiety and you could be, you know, anxiety can cause these fears, you know, mm-hmm, but sometimes if you live with anxiety disorders, you just live with them, but you do things to manage it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I think part of the reason why it gets worse if you keep fighting it is because you don't know how to manage it.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, yeah.
Well,
because we started in, just to kind of give the listener a little bit of a background here. I thought the episode was great. I thought it was over.
Can't wait to listen
back
to it.
We ended
it. Yeah.
But then, like, we started talking about fear and the element of fear and like deep thoughts on fear, which is an important thing to talk about, which obviously
fear and how it holds us back from who we want to be.
You know, because some people could say, well, let fear drive you, but it's like you're going to drive yourself into the ground if you don't know how to like recognize what's causing that fear. Why am I afraid? Is it existential? Is it internal? Is it something tangible? Like, can I deal with it? How can I deal with it? And we were kind of talking about that, and Tyler and Matt were just hitting some great stuff, and I was like, I hope this is okay. Can I turn the microphones back on? Because I think fear within the realm of both Nightmare on Elm Street and horror, kind of what that plays off of, whether it exaggerates fear or whatever, kind of within the realm of all these things. And just as a whole, I know there are people out there, you know, none of us are experts, but we have done reading on these things and are kind of three of a like mind when it comes to a lot of things. So I was like, let's see what we can get out of just talking about fear, because a serious discussion about fear hopefully can reach somebody.
Yeah.
Like, we want to make you laugh.
Somebody who's going to hear it and be like, oh, wait, I recognize that.
Yeah.
The same way we were talking. It's like, I feel that too. Yeah, so I relate.
Whether we tied it back to the movie or not, I was like, I just want to record this serious discussion about fear. So I hope it wasn't something that was inappropriate for like.
No, absolutely.
Because I was like, I had the thought, I was like, damn it, this is great. This is great. The episode was great, but this is some great shit.
Can I
turn the mics back on?
All I'm thinking about are two dim-witted vampires for a gigolo warehouse.
That's how the episode started. And this could be in the episode proper, or it could be an addendum to the episode. Yeah.
Whenever we figure it out.
Yeah. We're going to release it.
A tag, if you will.
A tag, if you
what's
will.
What's the Eleanor Roosevelt quote where she's like,
I look like a horse.
Yeah.
Not that
Why don't
one,
you want to do me?
Right. Not just the FDR, but just anybody.
Yeah.
It's something about like, I don't want to mess this up.
I don't want her to haunt me in my dreams.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that it's relevant. I hope it is.
Of course.
Probably.
I can dream about you.
Dead air.
Dead air.
Oh, man. I think the quote is, no one can make you feel inferior except for yourself. And that is tangentially related.
Sure.
Yeah. I think what I'm trying to say is that oftentimes we forget how powerful we are.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're afraid of is our power and
and
the strength that we have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that it's the only true power you have at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
It's so easy for us to blame circumstances on others or media or who the president is. But all of that, it's still contained in your own consciousness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so figuring out a way to get above that and to realize that, oh, if I could just like see this from a different perspective and I could kind of unfuck myself, basically. Yeah. And I guess conquer evil with love.
Mm-hmm. There you go. I mean, it's
like, what do you think the end of the movie, like, what do you think that, distill that down into like a sentence, what do you think it communicates whenever she turns her back and she
says,
I take back the power I gave you.
I think it's essentially that. Taking the power back over your own life and not letting this thing dictate.
Yeah.
Because she's in her own self-made prison because I have to stay awake or I will die.
Yeah.
Because it's happened. And, you know, through trauma and tragedy that Nancy has faced, I feel like what she's doing is, despite all these ways you've ruined my life, you will not have this power over me anymore. My life is my own.
Yeah.
You know,
there's so many religious undertones.
Yeah. Yeah. And, and with Wes Craven's new Nightmare, which came out in 94, so just a couple years before Scream, Wes Craven in Never Sleep Again talks about when he was writing that and directing that. He was like, I feel like, you know, some of my biblical, like, teachings that I was brought up with kind of came through. So I feel like whether or not you want to accept it or deny it, that stuff, if you hear it enough, maybe not kind of the more dangerous aspects of biblical teaching, but just the biblical ideals kind of sneak their way into your subconscious, mm-hmm. and kind of your brain makes you feel like you might have come up with that, yeah. but then you're like, oh shit, that was something I heard Sister Roberta say in Sunday school.
Because I remember praying prayers when I was a youth, and it was like Satan, or it sounds like I'm praying to Satan.
Yeah.
But basically I was calling out.
Me again.
Hey, man. It was me calling out Satan and saying, you have no power over me.
Yeah.
You know, like if I was scared at night or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Just, you know, in the name of Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then just being like, be gone or whatever.
Right. Yeah. And it just, it leads, because so many people kind of relate to that no matter their belief system. Some people would say, well, do we create fear?
Yeah.
And maybe Wes Craven wasn't necessarily putting a stamp on it saying, mm-hmm. we as humans create fear. But it's one of those things where, like, whether we create fear or not, we have control mm-hmm. over what makes us scared.
Yeah.
And that's not mm-hmm. always the case. Again, we're not experts, but it's just sure. kind of, like you said, shooting from the hip.
I think it's like you want to have a certain level of fear. Like you
want
to.
Yeah. Fear drives you.
So it's like the goal is not to eradicate fear completely, because if you love anything in this world, there mm-hmm. is a fear of losing it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like automatically attached mm-hmm. to it. And I think that's why people are afraid to love.
Yeah. Absolutely. Put themselves out there. Fear of, you know, if I put myself out there, I'm putting everything out there, like my emotions, my heart, all that stuff. I'm so scared of that being
taken away,
rejected and taken away. Exactly. And all the, like, when you're in your present and you see this person or the people that you love, there's no way you're like, we're always going to have these moments. And I don't know, again, I'm just shooting from the hip,
of course,
too, but like, it's that fear of losing that. I don't know, you can cut this, but it's
Fear of losing what you desire.
Yeah.
I think a mm-hmm. lot of the time.
What you want kind of thing.
Like, how can I even be afraid of losing this thing I don't even have that I'm afraid I'll never have?
Exactly. Your emotions make you alive, I guess, which mm-hmm. is, of course, but like the range of emotions, when you feel deeply, you hurt deeply, and mm-hmm. you're scared to hurt deeply because you've hurt deeply before, and it sticks with you, and that itself kind of compounds onto everything else. And so you're scared to put yourself out there. You're scared. Mm-hmm. You want to love, but you're scared to love. You don't want to be alone, but you're scared to pursue anything mm-hmm. like that.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah, for sure.
But that's another thing, too, is like people laugh at horror movies and mm-hmm. they put horror movies down similar to drugs or whatever.
Yeah.
Some people do that with religion. They're like, oh, this is just a bunch of hocus pocus.
Yeah.
But there really is something to it.
There is.
You know, and there's something to horror movies. It's not just like slashers. And, it can be that
for
some people.
Can.
Some people experience the art form
sometimes
that way.
Sometimes it is exactly face value.
There are people who are intelligent and think abstractly, and they subscribe to this.
Yeah.
There's got to be something to it's not just a bunch of brainless sheep.
Yeah,
like there are smart people.
There's certainly a depth to it.
Yeah.
And who knew that I could have a religious experience
exactly
taking 10 milligrams of an edible and then sitting there and watching Nightmare on Elm Street.
Maybe we've got it all wrong and God wants that for us. Like it's like this is how I intended your brain to function.
Yeah. Well, it's like I imagine I don't believe in a delineation between secularism
sure.
and
right.
religion. It's
sure.
all beautiful to me.
Yeah. Like,
it's all contained.
Absolutely. Yeah.
In this vibrant and beautiful world.
It's all humans.
It's all sacred.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all at its core, a lot of it is humans trying to see the good in things, because there's a lot of good, and I think we're so bogged down, especially as you become an adult, with negative. It's mm-hmm. all over the place, and that teamed with your own, you know, emotional trauma, mm-hmm. emotional neglect, stuff like that. Like, you just accept the fact that I am just how I am. These things are just how they are, and like there's somewhat like people who see at the core is like, no, there's beauty and there's good things out there. You don't have to be this way. You know, it's back to your own personal choice kind of thing.
And what helps me reconcile all of that is what I do believe is the life force that mm-hmm. goes throughout life, to that connects us to love and to, you know, there could be multiple that connects. There's the positive and the negative.
Right.
I'm not applying a yin and yang. I'm not applying all these things, but there's a life force that connects us to a creator. You know, I think God is so much more vast than how we have, like,
compartmentalized
him, reduced him, watered him down over thousands of years.
People make God what they want God to be.
To where I see more of this universal life force of, you know, who you can connect to through a psychedelic experience, who however you connect to joy and to love and to your emotions and how you're truly living out your emotions, you're connecting to that life force. And there is negativity in this world that humans can bring upon themselves. And I am by no ways a biblical scholar or a scholar of any sort. I make fart jokes.
I got a semester of Bible college.
There you go. So we're here with expert Tyler Crandall.
And I'm someone who grew up with Bible training, but I don't, I've shrugged off most of it.
I don't even know where I stand with any of that anymore.
What there is there's this, there's the tangible and the intangible life force that you connect to when you laugh. When you cry, when you feel joy, when you watch the when you watch a horror movie and you're scared with this collective experience, when you take an edible and you experience things differently, your brain opens up and you're allowing more facets of, like, this life force we're all plugged into to kind of go throughout. And that's what connects you with people with similar interests or just in your emotions.
You can't be too reductive about something as big as the idea of someone who created the whole universe or this whole big world.
Things are too complex to just understand on a minuscule stage.
That's why it irritates me. People take complex issues and try and whittle them down to it's this or it's this. Yeah. And I think that's where a lot of conflict, and I'm not into politics or anything, that, like, a lot of conflict comes from. You've got one side saying, no, it's this way, and the other side saying this way. No one is embracing nuance and accepting that, like,
contradiction.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Someone says, I think this, and then you assume that they believe this litany of other things, when really it's like, well, I feel this about this, but I feel this about this. And this is like, it's this nuanced, you know, nuance isn't embraced. There's no complexity embraced. There's no accepting that we are complex people that have the ability to think abstractly. We whittle ourselves down to you're either this or you're this.
Yeah. I had a history professor at Mizzou.
Yeah.
And he was a great professor.
Yeah.
But I remember one day he went up to the chalkboard and he had this quote. It was F. Scott Fitzgerald.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it said, the true test of a first-rate intelligence is the ability to hold two opposing ideas in mind at the same time.
Yeah.
And still retain the ability to function. And that's what we're missing in society.
Yeah, that I relate to that a lot. And I thought there was something wrong with me, like, growing up and having, it's like, yeah, I feel this way, but my brain is also telling me the, like, the contrary to it. And I'm like, that's why it was so difficult for me as a kid. Like, and even now, like, having opinions and then expressing them, because I'm like, I don't know, like, if I fully think this, because this poses, like, an interesting counter to that. So I always thought there was something wrong with me, because in my brain, I'm like, what is it with these people who are so confident and, like, I think this?
Well, I used,
like,
to be one of those people.
Yeah. Sure. And, and absolutely. And to an extent, I did too as well. But even then, I don't think, I say to an extent, I don't think I've ever been that kind of person.
I can say emphatically that I was
that person
who saw it one way and this is how it is.
Yeah, exactly. And I just always thought I was weird because I always felt that I wasn't, like,
what's wrong with that though? What's wrong with being weird? That's what I've kind
of nothing wrong. That's absolutely nothing.
And what constitutes weird?
Exactly. Who determines that?
Yeah.
It, especially over the last 4 or 5 years, I'm like, I like being different, though. I don't want to be like everybody else. I don't want to think like everybody else.
People who throw stones, it comes out of a lack of understanding. Yeah. All I see is this is contrary to either what I myself have been led to believe and I, like, wholeheartedly believe, or what I've been taught to believe.
Yeah.
And it's just, I'm used to believing that way. So like, I don't understand what you're doing. So that's strange to me.
Yeah.
That's
and
weird.
I don't like it.
Yeah. And I don't like it.
Yeah.
That's also a big problem.
Sure.
Yeah, I think part of it too is just the fear of being on the outside of whatever group you associate with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. So
yeah.
If for me, I'll just use a personal example growing up in church.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like, well, you want to have opinions that align with church because that's where all your friends are.
Right.
Yeah, and exactly. That's your social group that you care about, and you don't want to be on the outside.
Exactly.
And you don't want to pursue other ideas of thinking. Right?
Yeah. Because they're not going to be my friends anymore, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
Like, I'm going to have is people being like, well, let me pray for you. Let me try and dissuade you from thinking this way, even though I'm trying to find things out about myself that I'm like, that makes sense. This doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
So some of this doesn't make sense you find yourself becoming more conflicted, and that just continues to burden you because like, I don't feel like I can talk to this person in this line of thinking because they'll think this way, or I can't talk to somebody like this because if I talk to an intellect, sometimes intellects can be dicks about like the religious types. So it goes back to nuance. You don't feel like you can have the complexities of a human being because there's always going to be one group that you have some that's has that side that they're gonna like try and fix you, or they're gonna look at you strangely. Yeah.
That's my difficulty a lot of times with social media.
Yeah.
Because I feel like I have, and maybe it's just because I don't do a great job of seeing other people as complex. Maybe I think that other people are just flat and 2D.
Mm-hmm. I get that.
And I often find myself being like, okay, I wanna post this. But then, like, what is this group going to think?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or if it's some other issue, I'm like, I want to say this, but how are those people going to think?
Exactly. Same.
And I think the reality is, like, more of us are kind of in the middle than we realize.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I know for me that that's a fear, is being on the outside and then realizing that is multiplied. Like, I don't.
Yeah.
Then I feel like I'm not a part of any group. I kind of feel isolated on an island.
Kind of. In a way, because of that fear, I've sort of tried to be everything to everybody.
Sure.
And then when you finally, you strip
that. So you don't know who you are anymore.
Exactly.
It's exhausting.
And then when you, that constant thought of, what's this group going to think? They're going to think this about me because I've created this image. They're going to think this about me because I've created this image, like this, and this. And then you step back and you're like, what do I think? Who am I?
Yeah.
What am I doing? Like kind of thing. It's like, I don't even know. I've always felt as though I've always been this vessel for other people. I don't know how to take care of myself.
Hmm.
I don't know how to address my needs. I don't know. I don't have the tools in my brain to deal with this kind of thing, to summon that courage and stuff. Like, so you almost feel like you're emotionally stunted in a way. Everyone else they don't have their shit figured out necessarily, but they've been through enough stuff to come out and say, like, I experienced this and it made me better this way. And you're like, I've never done that because I've always been too scared and I've always tried to be this person over here to this group and this person over here to this group. And now I don't feel as though I have the tools to get through anything.
Mm-hmm.
And it's disappointing.
Certainly.
And that's also like the fear of disappointing people, because then when you have to come to grips with the fact, it's like, maybe like I'll have to reveal this side of myself to this group and they'll be disappointed because I feel like I've been lying to them or same over here. So I don't know.
For me, it's been like a part of that is just revealing who you really are.
Yeah.
And fully accepting yourself first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I'd like to think that I could be I'm not really super into labels these days, but the other night I wrote a note and I was like, could I be like the first open pothead Christian mushroom taking intellectual musician?
Yeah.
Actor.
All these things.
Could I be all of those things?
Yeah.
And I don't see, I mean, and at the funny thing is like, that is who I am.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is who I am.
Yeah.
But so many people don't get to see all the different sides of that.
Yeah.
And so I'm writing a story about the story they're writing about me.
Right.
And that's influencing my decisions.
Yeah.
Which is fucked up. And so you have to figure out a way to get away from that and start living out your truth.
Like, how can I just be me? Like, all those things, like you said, like Tyler, you said you don't like labels. Like, because that's just how the outside world, that's what they'll use to judge you. So they can't see these things living harmoniously. A pothead Christian, mushroom taking Christian musician. But like,
those things contradict each other.
Do they though? But like you said, the only way you can find your true purpose is if you kind of just find what makes you tick, what gives you joy, and like you're like, I'm just Tyler. That's who I am.
I'm one of one.
Yeah. Exactly. I'm out here doing all these things that you all will label, but I'm making it all work, baby. Like I'm doing this because this
Stand
is
back, baby.
Yeah, it's like but this is me. Like, this is how I connect with life and how I feel. I'm somebody who is healthy and getting healthier in their emotions, who finds joy in playing music, writing comedy, smoking pot, these ways that help me open up creatively. And who are you to judge me? So I know that that plays into kind of, I'm not going to put words in your mouth. I'm guessing that's probably what you were going for with kind of bucking labels.
Yeah. And I think realizing also just going back into Nightmare and connecting the dots. It's like, again, all of that is a story that you're writing yourself. And so it's like, how do you overcome that? You write a different story. You write a new narrative. You tell a different story. Right. And a lot of that involves going back into your past, which is terrifying and scary. And detaching the meaning that you already have to it and finding a more positive perspective and a more positive way to see it. And I can think of like biblical allusions to that. You know, you can talk about the story of Joseph in Genesis and how he was able to overcome numerous horrible situations, being sold into slavery, being thrown in jail. And at the end of his story, he comes out of it and he says, all of this happened for a reason. And I'm choosing to believe that it did. That this happened so that I could get to this position in Egypt so that I could save the people. And it's like figuring out a way to not make that, I mean, overly religious. I think everyone has a certain, you know, this 90s, early 2000s evangelical. If you grew up in the church, like, God is a loaded term. Jesus is a loaded term. The Bible is like a loaded thing. But it's like just taking that story and imagining that it was just a story. And it wasn't contained with all of this extracurricular meaning that you're attaching to it. And just seeing it objectively as a story. And then reflecting on that and being like, man, like, how does that integrate in my life? How can I be inspired by that? To take all of the negative shit that's happened to me and flip it into something positive.
It's so crazy because it's that kind of stuff that always made me think that I was quote unquote bad at church because I didn't, I hardly remembered stories, rarely remembered Bible verses, all that stuff. But whenever I would hear a message or at least look at a story, I'm like, okay, yeah, this was thousands of years ago, but there's a very real human element that they experienced back then that we're experiencing now that informs us and says that humans have struggled with so many of the same things for thousands of years. And so when you strip, like, whatever taboo away from it, or you strip kind of the buzzwords and negativity and all the things that are brought up, there is a very real human experience attached to a lot of that stuff, which I think people, I give people a lot of credit, and I think a lot of people connect with that. It's not like, how many days did it rain on the boat or whatever, you know? It's like, oh, was it 6, 7, 24 hour days? Like, when you look at it, there's real
The Josh McDowell books growing up,
it's
like those type of apologists.
When you strip all that away, and that's with any religion, it's addressing human curiosity, human emotions, explanations, stuff like that. Because even if you limit yourself, because I think people can limit themselves, and you know, obviously in the Bible it says like narrow is the road that leads to life or whatever. So I think people narrow their whole focus. That they shut, like there are so many things that they can learn from other people and other thoughts and stuff like that. And I think if there is a God, I think if he's created us to be these complex emotional beings, why would we limit ourselves the way that we do kind of thing?
For sure. For sure. And realizing that all, I think if you really believe that God loves everybody and that God loves all people, part of that is just being open to listening to other people and hearing them out.
Exactly.
I know for me, like a really powerful experience, because when I was in high school, just a backstory to catch everybody up.
Yeah.
I was definitely the church kid.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the three of us were very heavily involved with youth group.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think all three of us were worship leaders at some point or another.
Yep.
Doing the literal song and dance.
Yeah, exactly.
But you know, you have certain beliefs about social issues or about other people.
Of course.
There is the in-group, and those are your friends in youth group. And there's the people that you quote-unquote other, right? So growing up for me, it was LGBTQ people. It was like
atheists.
I was like, I really, those people really need Jesus. Like,
right.
Though, I mean, I need God, but like those people really need
like
God.
They're lost, man. They don't know what they're missing.
Right.
Yeah.
And so there was this this arrogance, I think, for me.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it, arrogance, for sure.
Yeah, and honestly, just an experience with the world and ignorance, I'd say.
A lot of ignorance. Yeah.
And I think that's a common trait of youth.
Yeah. Yes, I think you know.
Arrogance and ignorance.
Exactly. Yeah.
But as I kind of grew up, I remember I really started to kind of think about things differently at the University of Missouri, because you're around so many different intellectuals and people who are smarter than you and people who are awesome.
Yeah.
People who challenge you. Mm-hmm. But I graduated and I found myself at the improv shop in St. Louis.
Yeah.
And I was around a lot of artistic people, brilliant people, some of who were a part of the LGBTQ community. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I really love these people. Like, I love hanging out. Awesome. These people are great. Like, they're not at all what church told me they would be
Christian media is vilifying those who do not subscribe to what we're saying. If you're not with us, you're against us, kind of thing.
I think
that's very damaging to you. It's damaging to your quote-unquote flock. I think to introduce that idea that it's us against them, our goal is to go, fucking hate this term, win people for Christ, as if it's a fucking competition.
Yeah,
like as in we're soldiers in God's army. It's like you're using violent illustrations for a peace-loving Jesus, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think one of my fears was allowing myself to hear different ideas and stuff like that, because in my brain I was so scared. I'm like, I'm going to hear something that contradicts what I believe.
Yeah.
And that contradiction is going to make more sense than what I believe.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to believe it anymore. So I was so scared of that.
The funny thing is, like, I always had this mindset, this openness, where I was like, all right, if the Bible is really true, if all of this is really true, it will hold up.
Sure.
And so I always kind of thought about my interactions with other people, and like I was never afraid to talk to somebody, because I'm like, well, I want to find the truth. It was kind of like that Alexander McCandless thing, like if you read End of the Wild. Truth is like the highest virtue, you know, that kind of mindset.
Yeah.
And what I found out was, as I kind of learned more and had more experiences and talked to more people, was I was like, truth itself is kind of like this shaky kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To where it's multifaceted.
Who determines that?
What is truth?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, the question that Pilate asked Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it's endlessly fascinating to me. And,
sure.
And that is, to me, like the interaction that you have with the Bible and mm-hmm. the interactions you have like this, talking about it and deriving meaning, it's way more edifying to me these days than going to listen to a sermon
at same, a church
or something like that.
For sure. And thank you, Freddy Krueger, for helping us realize all that.
Exactly.
Thank you.
This is quite the tonal shift from what we're used to.
Thank you for sitting with us again. Absolutely. And I'm sure I probably
got some editing to do, my friend.
I did a little intro at the beginning to let you all know that this is kind of a tag,
an
addendum
down.
To our Nightmare on Elm Street episode with our very good friend Tyler, which I am so glad we fell into this. This was beautiful.
Yeah.
And hopefully
not
those
planned.
Of you,
spontaneous.
Not planned.
Absolutely spontaneous. Yeah. Hopefully those of you listening, in some way, shape, or form, this is life-giving.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be my hope.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's
do something to help
kind of
enrich
what we
want to
do with this podcast as a whole, is to bring joy, maybe bring an escape for some people, mm-hmm. to make you laugh, to inform you, to do these types of things, because I just want to do a show that people enjoy in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And this was great for me. I know I can pretty much say it's great for you guys. I don't want to
put
words in your mouth. But this was great for all of us to kind of just sit and talk about this.
Yeah.
Having you on, Tyler, has been a joy. It's been a blast. Mm-hmm. It's this type of stuff we knew that we could count on you for, this great just deep conversation.
Yeah.
Whether it ties to Nightmare on Elm Street or it doesn't. If you just want to hear us talk, I'll probably call this episode like Fear and Emotion, in episode 97.2.
If you want people to listen to it like for real, you should call it, something about Johnny Depp and Amber Heard.
Yeah, exactly. Don't take a shit.
Draw a lot of listeners.
Yeah. Don't take a shit on the bed of your fear or something like that. But
don't believe everything you heard.
If hopefully you enjoy this. If maybe this isn't your thing and you just want to listen to us talk straight horror movie, by all means,
silly skits.
Yeah,
we did that too. We hopefully
something for everybody.
Yeah,
exactly.
Much like the horror genre, Tyler. I know we said it in the original episode.
Yeah.
We can't thank you enough for being on. This was excellent.
Thanks for
having me. Especially
just
this shoot from the hip spontaneous little episode we have going here. Thank you all for listening.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully you yourselves are taking care of yourselves. When we say be good to yourselves, be good to each other, it's not just a phrase that we started 3 years ago.
Yeah.
We genuinely hope you're being good to yourself and being good to other people.
I will say I've never once gone through the motions when saying that.
Right.
Because
I believe
me saying that at the end. I've never once, when I said it, thought, I'm just doing it as the tag at the end.
Right.
I've meant every single word, every single time I say it. Be good to yourselves. Be good to each other. Why would you be rude when you could be rad? And I'm happy. I'm happy to say that I've never once gone through the motions.
Yeah.
Like, I genuinely want you to be good to yourself. Be good to other people. Because seriously, what's the point in being rude? Just go out and be fucking radical to everyone.
Yeah, exactly.
Life rips. That's not mine.
You can attribute it to Matt, though. So if you make t-shirts, you know where to send royalties.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but thank you all for listening. And we thank you every week. I know, Matt, you already said it. Why would you want to be rude? It could be rad. We mean that.
Yeah.
Thank you. We love you. Thank you. And good night.
Tonight.
Peace.